All right. This is a public service announcement. The quality of this podcast is pretty terrible. And you want to know why? Because Brandon is the one that knows how to do everything. He's the one that knows how to interview. He's the one that knows how to run the audio equipment. And you know what he did? He said, "Hey, Dave, why don't you do both of those things without me?" And so, of course, it failed. And so I apologize for your experience that's ahead. But I also am not sorry because it's Brandon's fault. He's the one that put me here, and he knows that I'm not good at these things. Anyways, that being said, I hope you enjoy this episode. So, joining me today, because Brandon is out, is my friend Steve. Steve, why don't you say hello?
Well, hey there, Dave. My name's Steve. I am a human, and I'm here today filling in for Brandon. So, hey, everybody.
What else is there to know? I mean, that's it, right?
I think that covers me.
Hey, let me ask you this. Have you ever been affiliated with this podcast before?
You may know me as, for Story Time News, this is Steven.
There he is.
That's me.
Not only that, Steve, but I see artwork every week. Every single week I see some artwork when I listen to this podcast. And I'm curious, do you know who did that artwork?
You may be surprised to know that that artwork, Dave, was done by yours truly, Story Time News, this is Steven.
Steve, you're such an interesting guy. I've got a question. Do you think that you come back on the show and we could just interview you?
You know, one day, if you know, we can maybe free up our schedules, maybe, yeah, maybe talk with our people. Yeah, I think I'd be down for that.
Oh, that would be the dream. Yeah. So, we're actually, the way we're going to do this particular episode, we usually have little closers, but this is a long interview because, again, I'm not good at interviewing like Bran, so I let it go too long. That being said, we are going to do just an intro, and then the episode will end right after the interview. But that being said, also, me and Steve, although this is before the interview, we've already interviewed. So, Steve, what are your thoughts?
What was my question?
What are your thoughts on the interview? Kind of like, are you excited about it? You can talk about it as if you haven't had it happen yet, and then we'll talk about it as if we did have it happen.
All I can say is dust can be very confusing.
It's true. Well, I guess our guest is William J. Hall, and he's an author. He's kind of like a magician that also applies that kind of his knowledge of kind of doing illusions and stuff like that to his search for ghosts and stuff, which is pretty interesting because who's not into magic, Steve?
I don't know.
Yeah, see, that's one person that doesn't know, and I'm pretty sure that's the way that every American would answer if you're really a true red-blooded American. I mean, they invented Disney World because everybody loves magic so much.
Is that really why?
Yeah, they're like, man, who likes magic? Every single person raised their hand, and then they gave every person a hammer, and they built Disney World.
Wasn't Disney World invented because Walt Disney didn't know how to, like, bag groceries? No, that was Walmart. Sorry.
There's the Walt and Wall. I mean, they're both there. But, no, Walt is a man who had a dream, and that dream involved magic. And he took it to the extreme with a mouse.
Think about this. What if Walt Disney was the one that made Walmart? So he would have been Walt-mart, and then it would have been Walt Disney.
So you're assuming that if Walt Disney was the one that made Walmart, then all of a sudden the guy that did Walmart would also have reversed and been the one that did Disney? Which, by the way, what's his name? His name's not that. It's something Walmart. Let's see what...
Sam Walter Smith or something like that.
Okay. Let's see how good your guess is. Who started it?
Come on, big money. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes.
What'd you say his name was again?
Sam Walter Smith.
Sam Walton.
Man, that was so close.
Where'd you get the Smith?
I think I was thinking of the one who started the Book of Mormon, Joseph Smith.
Oh, now that's more interesting to me is if Sam Smith was the one that started Walmart.
Sam Smith?
This is getting really interesting.
You're telling me.
Dude, Steve, sing your song. Sing the song you love.
Oh, won't you stay with me?
And start a chain with me.
I was hoping you'd say company, but okay.
That was the second verse, Steve. You ruined it. Oh, man, Steve. It's good to have you on the show.
Is it though, or do you just lose 30 viewers?
Do you like? I feel like my voice changes when Brandon's not here because I have more pressure on me, and now I'm talking like a radio show host.
For Starry Time News.
No. See, the whole point of doing the news is you have to be as like unexcited as possible.
Can I just give a little clip as to why I talk the way I do during Starry Time News?
Can I take a guess first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because you were at work all day, and you're about to go to bed, and you're drained, and then you get a call from Brandon that says you still need to do the news, and so you just take the remaining ounce of energy you have left in your body before you fall on your bed to finish the news?
That is 98% accurate. The last 2% is I try and mimic NPR as much as I can and fail as much as I can.
Hey, we all have dreams.
And we all fail?
That's the other 98% of it. But it's like the reason that people listen to our show is because of our like apparent lack of enthusiasm, and then other times way too much of it. Like, we don't ever stabilize.
So you bring balance to enthusiasm like Anakin Skywalker brought balance to the Force.
Okay, and that brings me exactly to the point that I had next. Okay, so if Anakin brings balance to the Force, why would eliminating the dark side bring balance? That would just make it offset good would be all.
Yeah, you know what? To be honest, if any of the listeners know the answer to that question, can they please... We had to talk about this, I think, the other day. Is that right?
Yeah, we were playing Battlefront, which is a great game.
Yeah, please feel free to share your views on that, too. But more importantly is the balance of the Force. If Anakin... Yeah, if the dark side gets destroyed, the balance is completely off-centered to the good.
This doesn't make any sense, and...
But I guess that's a good way to be off-balance.
Yeah, if you're gonna... But then it should be that he's gonna... The Force is balanced, and he's going to bring, like, imbalance to the Force.
He's going to bring unbalance.
He should say, he's going to bring positive imbalance to the Force.
This is just too complicated.
Yeah, but...
This is why George Lucas is a pretty smart guy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he may...
I'll never talk to him, so...
Let's just leave it at that. Yeah, he's a great guy. So, Steve, what are your thoughts on the interview? What, besides the dust thing, did you like, do you feel like you've changed anyway after seeing that?
You know, it was actually a pretty great interview. I feel like I learned a lot about poltergeists, a lot about flaps.
Mm-hmm.
and that was a good interview overall. I mean, I think the listeners are in for a really great treat this week.
Our job at this point in the show is always to convince you to keep listening, and I hope that we've done just that.
Do you think that got the point across?
Yeah, Steve, if this doesn't do it, if what you did didn't do it, here's the real clincher. Steve asks just such a great question right at the end there.
Yeah.
I think that you really got to stay tuned for. I mean, he put a lot of thought into this one, and you can almost hear what he says.
As I say it, I literally call it a hard-hitting question, which I think it really is in this type of field, you know?
Yeah, so stay tuned for a hard-hitting question. That being said, I think it would just be a full circle if you would just introduce Brandon in the news. So why don't you say, kick it to the news, Brandon. That's just how that's what we usually do it, so.
All right, Steve, kick it to the news, Brandon.
For the Starry Time News, this is Brandon. The Daily News posted an article this week all about Bigfoot, where they pose the question, if Bigfoot exists, then why doesn't he have Instagram? That's a really good question, and one that we just don't have the answers to. This next story comes out of New Zealand at an all-girls school, where they claim that they're also full of ghosts. One girl claims that she received a fat lip during a nighttime assault from a ghost. What is the cause of these ghosts? I don't know. And finally, there appears to be the first ever autopsy of a real-life alien going on. The result of this autopsy remains to be seen, but we'll keep you updated on further updated episodes and stuff. For the Starry Time News, this was Brandon.
Okay, we have now with us on Starry Time Podcast, William J. Hall. A little bit about the author. William J. Hall, author of the paranormal bestseller The World's Most Haunted House, The True Story of the Bridgeport Poltergeist on Lindley Street, returns with another profound investigation into the unknown. Hall is professionally equipped to recognize trickery, After more than 25 years as a performing magician, he knows how to create and recognize illusions. He is also an experienced researcher of the unexplained, from folklore and urban legend to fortune-telling, the pyramids, and other mysterious tales. His syndicate column, Magic in the Unknown, ran for 6 years in multiple newspapers. Hall has 2 sons and resides in Plainville, Connecticut. Does that sound about right?
That does. Yeah, that's me.
Better hope that's you.
Fantastic. Okay, so the question that we're going to be asking are in relation to the Haunted House Diaries. Is that right?
Sure, you can ask whatever
okay.
you like.
Okay, that was just making sure I got that title right. Okay, so we'll start off by asking, what is a paranormal flap?
Yeah, the Haunted House Diaries deals with a paranormal flap located in Litchfield County, Connecticut. And paranormal flap, I guess, in essence, is just an area that has a heightened level of paranormal activity. As somebody once said, you know, it's a haunted world, so it's not like you step across the street and there's no more paranormal activity. But within this area, there definitely is a long, long history of heightened paranormal activity. An example of a very well-known, probably the best well-known paranormal flap would be the Bermuda Triangle. There's the Bridgewater Triangle, there's the Hudson Valley UFO flap, which actually is along the same route as this flap. So that's basically, you know, what we're talking about. So it's a very fascinating area.
So you would say that things get gradually more and more paranormal as you go towards the flap, or is it just one more of a circular type region?
Well, we've identified that area as just having a long history of paranormal activity. So there's, you know, definitely very powerful open portal, if you will.
Uh-huh.
A lot of these terms have baggage, so, you know, take them with a grain of salt. But, you know, for whatever you interpret, window, you know, stargate,
uh-huh.
a door, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it's definitely a very powerful area that has had a history of a variety of paranormal experiences, whether it's UFOs, cryptids, many, many years of Bigfoot sightings, even hundreds of years ago having, you know, legends of sky people coming down and talking to the people. So uh-huh. it's just a very active area. And, the case itself at the epicenter, for lack of a better word, is a 1793 farmhouse where Donna, the lady of the house, has kept a diary for 50 years of bizarre things that have happened in the house. Her family has lived there for 6 generations. So, you know, for her, the paranormal's normal. So,
mm-hmm.
And luckily, most of it hasn't been negative. So, you know, my first question would be, well, why did they stay there? Well, you know, for her, you know, she was born in the hospital, brought back to the house, and she grew up there. So, luckily, it's not, although many people probably would have moved, for her, it was just, you know, a way of life that they understood, that they thought was natural and that everybody had, until she started having sleepovers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and realizing that, you know, not all houses were the same.
So, yeah,
so.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, to just realize that's the way she grew up in it. What type of phenomena usually take place in those areas? So,
Well, you know, there's just a great variety, which is why it's a perfect case example for the need for us to look at the paranormal holistically versus in silos. In other words, there's things that happen inside the house that are indicative of UFOs, you know, in the literature, you know, figures of bright lights, you know, lights coming through and orbs and different things of that nature.
Uh-huh.
And there's also ancestors pairing, as well as different kinds of entities, whether it be shadow people or clerics, as we call them, because they seem to be these robed kind of thin figures, as well as what appears to be like a little boy, for lack of a better term, with elongated ears. You know, just a variety of things going in through the house. And the house, and the kitchen was originally general store, so there's also the hustle and bustle of, you know, store customers and horse and buggies outside. So it's just a variety of things happening there, in addition to, you know, time slips in the area, phantom roadblocks, phantom houses, you know, in other words, things that are there one time and gone another, which is indicative of a lot of abduction experiences. You know, as far as missing time, sometimes filling in that time are these experiences of things that don't quite seem right, that later are no longer there. So there's a lot of UFO activity in the area, long, long history of that, as well as jets and black helicopters following, and what we now know is a military base there. At the time of the book, it was potentially a secret military base. Now, maybe not so secret, but we definitely know there's stuff going on there. We don't know, you know, they're there just to study that, but it wouldn't surprise me that they're studying that, because, you know, there is a long history of the government kind of following these kind of flap areas. So, yeah, it's kind of like a paranormal crossroads, or as my dear friend Paulino calls it, a paranormal circus. Or as I call it, kind of like your shopping mall for the paranormal. It's just a great place to go to gather evidence and experience things, because you don't have a family that's in a crisis. You have a family that is, you know, very much curious and not dysfunctional or in need of, you know, quote unquote, you know, a parasite being, you know, to get rid of. They're just living their life. It's not dominating their life. And so it's really it's truly a unique situation there in that farmhouse. And then in the area in itself, there's a history of multiple haunted houses, as well as a long history of things going on there, as well as some famous Bigfoot sightings and quote-unquote spirit sightings in the area and things of that nature.
The house is still haunted today. When you went to that area, do you still feel like it still has something going on there?
No, it doesn't. It, you know, never had activity before or after. You know, poltergeists are very much about the family.
Okay.
And most hauntings, you know, I've learned, are really a component of the geo factors in the area. Mm-hmm. You know, the land usually, and then kind of like the match that hits the oil tends to be the dysfunction that's going on, or the frequency that's being sent out by the person who is sending out these negative frequencies. In the case of a poltergeist, it's usually, of course, you know, a teen or preteen. In the case of a, you know, just a regular negative haunt, it's somebody is going through something. So the first question you always ask is, you know, what's going on in your life? And you'll always find that there's something there, and that they're sending out a certain kind of frequency that's attracting these negative parasites that tend to feed off, I call them parasites, they tend to feed off that kind of energy. And the way to get rid of them is always the same too, and that's to change the frequency so that they can no longer feed off of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they go away. So, and that was the case with Lindley Street. So if you had another dysfunctional family in Lindley Street, could it happen again? I would say, you know, it certainly is possible, because there's sandy soils, high water tables. Not so much today, but there was a lot of power lines around the house. And there also was a spring that ran under the house, so the geotechnic factors are there. You know, as far as electromagnetic energy factors are there to cause that. But the missing ingredient is we don't have somebody sending out the same kind of frequency. The only person who's lived in the house since is a little old Portuguese woman, and she, you know, she doesn't have any of those issues, nor does she know the history of the house. So she's been there 15 years, you know, no issues. So I wouldn't expect, especially the poltergeist, I wouldn't expect there to be another issue. It's certainly possible. But again, you'd have to have, you know, I don't think it ever would happen at all if you didn't have that kind of perfect storm, you know, with the family that was in there at the time when it took place.
That's interesting. So the poltergeist is attached to the family more so than the location. So.
Yeah, I do find, you know, and there are, of course, haunted places where if you move, then it's the next person's problem. You know, there are those kinds of haunts. But even with those, you know, the people definitely kind of control or influence the degree of issues there's going to be. So, like in the Haunted House Diaries, we have this farmhouse. The family very much, it was a very large family. Now it's just Don and her husband living there. But, you know, they hear footsteps. They don't yell demon and run. They just hear footsteps and their footsteps. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if you had a dysfunctional family in there, there'd be a lot of trouble, just a lot of trouble. You know, when you have an open portal like that, certainly there are things coming in and peeking in, so to speak. But if you have a negative entity peeking in, there's nothing to feed on there because Donna doesn't give a crap, you know. they're not. So it's so it very much. It's not just the people, of course, and it's not just the land and whatever, but the perfect combination of the two. I do know if you got a dysfunctional family in that house, that they would have negative things happening. Unlike Donna and her husband, that has maybe they jump, of course, if a curtain, you know, falls off or whatever, just like any of us would jump if we heard a loud noise. But it's not the same kind of frequency that you're sending out to track these negative things. Negative things would pop in and realize there really was nothing there for them, mm-hmm. and move on. So, you know, they're kind of the perfect people to have in a place like that. And in Lindley Street, if you had other people in that place, we probably wouldn't be talking about it, you know.
Okay, so I know a lot of people would probably want to, like, see this kind of stuff. So is there anything that was captured on audio or video that people would be able to access to see?
Yes. Actually, all three, both photos as well as audio as well as video. We're very lucky in this case because, you know, as Paul's son, Ben Eno, says, every time you go there, it's something different. It's really kind of a one-stop shopping for the paranormal. So we had voice-activated recorders set up in the house. We had movement-activated photos that would take three consecutive timed photos to capture things in the house. And Paul Eno in 2010 was talking to Dale, the grandson, and this is a very interesting story. The grandson from very early age would point up into the ceiling where, you know, nothing was there, and he would pronounce what sounded like, later on we learned, was Ashwar. And we actually have it on video, an old home video from 2009 where he can hardly speak, and he's pointing and saying Ashwar, you know. And later on, we, you know, as we hear him speak it clearly, we know what he's trying to say. And he would put toys around the tree outside the house and say, "What are you doing?" And put toys out for Ashwar. And he explained that Ashwar was a little girl in a blue dress who died in a car accident with her mother. They hit a tree, and she was now stuck there to observe, and she didn't know where her mother was. And, of course, we know it's, of course, not a little girl in blue dress, because that's, you know, common archetype. But so when Paul was there in 2010 and asked Dale, "Well, is Ashwar here now?" And Dale said, "Yes, she's up in the tree." And he points out beside the window. Of course, it's pitch dark. So Paul goes out with his infrared camera, and he films it. And he actually catches this entity coming down in front of the tree. And so we actually have that on film, and both those videos are available in the bonus page that comes with the book. But what's fascinating, too, is we ran into Gregory Harold from Florida, who back in the 70s was trying to catch a vandal and would set up an infrared camera and started filming these entities over about a two-year period, and studying their behavior, and they ended up, of course, being a bunch of Ashwars. So I interviewed him for the book, too, in getting his opinion on it. So it's really, really a fast, just an example of just some of the fascinating things that happened in the house. And so he had caught on film. He sent me an hour and a half of video of a bunch of these Ashwars, and he studied their behavior and whatnot. He thinks they're aliens of some sort, but, you know, I mean, who knows? I mean, that's the other thing. You know, we mix ghosts and aliens together. You know, if it happens inside, we tend to think ghosts and spirits. If it happens outside, we tend to think UFOs. But you know, we see things happening in this house that are indicative of more UFO encounters, and other things that are more indicative of you know, spirit encounters. So it really runs the gamut.
So let me ask you this question. You said you used to write for a column, and you try to but you would either debunk something or tend to more believe it.
Right.
And you said if Houdini went one way or another, he may have found something he was looking for as well.
Yeah.
And so I guess what's going on in this area is, you're saying there's a lot going on in this area. It's a paranormal flap. What would you say is the amount, not necessarily percentage, but would you say that more or less it tends to be that these things, like if you talk about poltergeist, for example, does it tend to be more true, or does it tend to be more something that gets debunked at the end when you look into it?
I would say I found more misinterpretation than fraud.
Mm-hmm.
There are poltergeist cases where the children throw things around, but usually when you bring anyone from the outside, it doesn't matter who, it doesn't have to be a magician, you know, any investigator, because parents sometimes don't believe their child, you know, is capable of doing, you know, particular thing. But usually in those cases, once you bring anybody from the outside, it's easily exposed. What I find is the art of magic has served me more to keep my own perception in check and to give a broader view to what I'm looking at, more objective view, than it is to find fakery. In other words, if you're going to have a fortune teller there, you need a magician, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have somebody who has scratches apparent on their arm, you need a psychologist, you know, that kind of thing. So bringing the right people in there is. But what I find more often, except for like some UFO cases, which you know, people will fake from now and then. Mm-hmm. But what we find more is misinterpretation, you know. Misinterpreting mental illness as paranormal, misinterpreting electromagnetic frequencies, which could be through power lines or water pipe or that kind of thing, interpreting those as a curse or paranormal because they can give you headaches, they can change your behavior, they can even cause cancer. So, you know, so you really have to know what you're doing to really delve into this. And the other thing which we find it runs rampant is photos. I mean, if I have a photo and something looks strange and I'm in a place, if I'm in the farmhouse and I know, I've seen it with my own eyes and I know there's real phenomena there, and now I take a photo and I see something in the photo, it's logical for me to say, wow, I've captured something. But you can't do that. You have to have an expert look at that photo. You know, we brought in Mark D'Antonio, who's an astrophysicist. He's also the national audiovisual expert for Mutual UFO Network. So I had the privilege of him being on the team, and he made sure when we looked at all these different photos that we got rid of anything that could be reflection. Or, you know, and it's very simple to, you know, after hanging out with him for a while, I realized how simple it is to really tell that. And I believe 98%, I'm just throwing this out of the air, but
yeah,
probably about 98% of these photos are not paranormal. And if you're not, and it doesn't matter if you're a photographer, if you are not an optical expert, if you don't understand optics, you need to have somebody look at the photos who does. And you can't use flash. You know, I mean, I'm not allowed on ghost walks because I'm a buzzkill. You know, if you go to a graveyard and you tell everybody, hey, everybody, get out your cameras and let's all take pictures and see if you capture any orbs. Well, if you're going to use flash, you're going to capture all sorts of stuff
because
you're going to have reflection off the gravestones. You know, I was at a ghost walk and I told everybody, okay, you can't use flash. Now take a picture. Well, now they get nothing. They don't like that. You know, they don't like, well, we don't get anything. Yeah, well, you don't get anything because guess what? Most cemeteries aren't haunted. So, so, and then people say, well, why do spirits come out at night? Well, they come out at night because that's when you take crappy photographs that you think are real, but they're really just, you know, reflections.
Yeah.
Optical illusions. So, you know, there is no time of day the spirits come out. Granted, sometimes when things are quiet, you may get some more activity. So there's some truth to that. But by and large, it's usually people taking photographs that trick themselves. So I find that to be, you know, one part of it. The other part that magic tells me is just how much we need to question things. You know, like magicians are taught, you can do the same trick and you can present it in different ways. So I can do a trick where I make something vanish and appear somewhere else, and I could do that as either a penetration effect, right, if it goes through the table. Mm-hmm. I can do it as a transposition. It was here, now it's there. I can do it as time travel. You know, now we're beginning the trick all over. We're back to where we were, you know. So in other words, you can do the same trick but present it and have it perceived in different ways depending on how you what words you say and how you present it. So that teaches me that you know, myself, I have to be very careful, and you know, we're always looking for meaning and context. You know, as humans, we want to make sense of things.
Yeah.
And when we do that, we're going to be making a lot of bad and incorrect assumptions. And, you know, we make a lot of assumptions in the paranormal, you know. We have to remind ourselves that it may be something else on our list, or it may be something that's not on our list yet, even. And, you know, I find it very frustrating when somebody comes forth and says, well, that's a residual thing, or this is this, or this is that. And they're very adamant about exactly what it is. And I feel it's very important to keep an open mind. You know, we assume ghosts are spirits of the dead, but I know for a fact that they are not in all circumstances. Are they in some circumstances? Maybe. You know, again, we got to keep an open mind. But there are a lot of so-called experts that believe they have it all figured out. And I believe there's a lot of false association going on, because as a magician, like I said, I know that I can present the same trick and sell it to you in, you know, 4, 5, 6 different ways. And, you know, if I present it as time travel, it may be miraculous to you or more effective than if I present it in a different way. So, you know, it's just knowing that and how easily that we are fooled by our own perceptions, that now we go to something that's called the paranormal, which is way beyond, you know, we're fooled by, of course, normal things. So just imagine how we can be fooled by the paranormal. So magic, I think, has taught me really a good scientific approach to kind of step outside and ask more questions and not assume that things are associated when they may or may not be.
Okay, so this is going to be kind of a twofold question. Your background in this area is as a magician, as it said in your bio. And like Houdini, you investigated and wrote about the unknown. How did you be convinced that this was a real case? And kind of how did you become personally involved in it in the first place?
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny the way it began for me. I was writing in multiple local newspapers as a columnist, a column called Magic and the Unknown. And I would debunk different things as well as investigate things, you know, whether they were interesting urban legends or whether they were things that I could debunk, like fortune telling. You know, one of the greatest moments for me is a few times when I was able to pose as a psychic and convince people who were, you know, wasting their good money by giving them to fakes and, you know, by posing as a psychic, and then later on revealing that, hey, I'm false and you don't need to do this. And that was normally by another family member, you know, bringing me in. So, you know, I thought that was a great thing. But I also was open-minded, like Houdini. Houdini was very open-minded, you know, unlike Amazing Randy, who, you know, believe me, I love and respect him, but of course he doesn't believe in anything. And so, you know, he's almost as guilty as the people who believe in everything. So, and I think both of those extremes are a problem, you know. And Houdini was very open to it. He really wanted to find the real paranormal. Unfortunately, with the way he went about it, he was really attracting, you know, people, seance people and psychics and things of that nature. So he was attracting the kind of people who were fraudulent. So anybody who got within 10 feet of them, their careers were over. But if he really went the other way, it would have been neat to see. He probably would have found what he was looking for if he went to investigate poltergeists and other kinds of paranormal activities. Unfortunately, he didn't. But I do truly admire his being open to trying to find that.
I really like how magic is such an intellectual thing in that way. I've also heard how people that have any experience with magic are more likely to accept things like, for example, something like global warming. If that was something that a regular person might just deny it or whatever, or they believe it, whatever the reason is, whatever they started on, they kind of are stuck there. But somebody that is used to the fact that it's so easy for us to be tricked with our minds, they're open to just the idea, like, maybe I'm wrong, because it's very easy for me to be confused. And when you're used to confusing people, you can see how easy it is, and you never know if you're the person on the other side of it.
Right. Like, we make a lot, as a matter of fact, I talk about this in Haunted House Diaries. There's a lot of discussion and theory in the book, which I'm happy about. You know, we assume, oh, because there's a spirit, there's an afterlife. That's not a direct correlation. I'm not saying there's not, and I hope there is, and, you know, and whether you're religious or believe in quantum physics, both of them do point towards, you know, an everlasting life, but regardless, you know, we make those associations. Well, we know spirits exist, therefore there's an afterlife. Well, that's an assumption. You know, another, and, you know, the biggest assumption of all that I put forth is that when you die, you're gonna know all the answers. That's what we want.
Yeah.
But what if there's no orientation? What if we don't know all the answers? You know what I mean? It's like, oh crap, you know, we don't want to think about that. And so there's a lot of paranormal assumptions that we make. UFOs are from other planets. Maybe not. Maybe they're from other universes, other times, other dimensions, other, you know, they might be from other planets. We don't know. So we need to really, keep check on ourselves. And, you know, like, I'm not a believer in demons. You know, I believe these things are other species. I don't believe they acknowledge our religion. And that's why, you know, when we do investigations, we don't use religion at all, because it's not necessary. They don't buy into our stuff. And so I think that's an assumption that is just kind of a primitive assumption based on, if something's really good, it's an angel, something's really bad, it's a demon. But, you know, I question that, you know, because I don't think there's a lot of pure evil. I think there's mental illness, you know, pedophiles, serial killers, they're all mentally ill. In fact, there was a judge that once said that he presided over many serial killers. He said, I'd never seen an evil person. And I thought that was a beautiful saying, because he recognized that these people had patterns, they had rules, they had ways that they lived that were not normal. You know, their wiring was messed up, but he recognized that it was not pure evil. It was very systematic. You know, they had their own kind of ways that they did. As a matter of fact, there was a serial killer that, as long as he was dating a girl, he wouldn't kill. And he had like a 10-year relationship one time. I remember reading this. And he didn't kill in 10 years. He broke up early, started killing again. You know, so you say, well, he's evil. You know, he's not evil. I'm not saying, you know, I want him to live near me, or, you know, that we should forgive him and let him go. I'm not saying that. But not evil. Just messed up. You know, wired wrong. I mean, mean, even Hitler was abused as a child. So, you know, when you look at, you know, how does somebody develop that way? Is it pure evil? I argue, no, it's not. It's a sickness. It's mentally ill. Nobody in their right mind would do that. And there may be pure evil. I don't know. But I think it's hard to find examples of pure good and pure evil. Maybe Mother Teresa would be a good example of pure good or closest thing to that. But, but I've had some interesting discussions at lectures where, you know, a guy went up to me and said, well, you don't believe in pure evil. I said, you know, I don't know, maybe, but give me an example. I mean, and he said Hitler. I said, well, I don't buy that because he was abused as a child. I mean, he was messed up. You know, I'm not saying that gives him an excuse for what he did, but he was messed up. He was not normal. And I think to be evil, you really have to be well-balanced. You know, if you're well-balanced and you choose complete evil, then maybe you can say, okay, you're pure evil, you know. But if you're mentally ill, if you've got issues, then, you know, points to the other. So we make these assumptions about the paranormal. We call the paranormal evil based on very, very limited interaction with them when they're not even in their own world. You know what I mean? So we're judging them. You know, I mean, if you saw me in a bad day where, you know, maybe who knows what happened to me, and you see me and I'm acting out, and you'd say, oh, that guy's a moron. Well, no, I'm acting like a moron. Doesn't mean I'm a moron, right? I mean, most people are loved by some people, so, you know, you figure, well, they're probably not a moron all the time. There's probably, yeah, it might be a reason for it, you know. But when we see a poltergeist, when we see possession, when we see any of these things, we say, oh, they're evil, they're bad, they're, you know, and maybe they are. But, you know, I think on the other hand, we really don't know, you know, because we're not seeing them at their best. We're not seeing them in their own element. Maybe they're scared too. I mean, we don't know, you know.
Would you say that they share the same, I guess, emotions, or even, I don't know if thoughts is the right word, but that kind of string of thought? Would you say that they kind of share those kind of actions that we do?
Well, you know, I think that's a good question. I mean, that's another one of our paranormal assumptions, right, that they have the same motivations as we do. Mm-hmm. We don't know if that's true. I mean, they appear, you know, like these parasites appear to feed on negative energy. Are they evil? You know, maybe they are, maybe they're not. You know, we really don't know enough about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that it seems like electromagnetic energy is the modality, or, you know, that all these things, whether it's Bigfoot, UFOs, or like, they're all on the same bus. They don't necessarily know each other, but, you know, that's the way they travel, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we don't know what their motivations are. And the only way we could see motivations is by thinking they're like us, and we've been wrong with that on our own planet. I mean, ants, for example, you know, they make a room for the dead and things like that. And I remember, you know, being in psychology class and raising my hand and saying, you know, do ants mourn over the dead? Is that why they put their dead in a room? And, you know, the teacher was explaining to me, no, that their motivations and their thinking and the way their brains work are not like us. And they're not putting their dead in a particular room because they're mourning. And, you know, and that blew my mind. You know, of course, now I forget the exact reason why. Uh-huh. But, you know, but here, you know, when we see things act like us, or, you know, when they're acting not like us, you know, we try to, of course, compare ourselves to us. And we find, you know, in the insect world in particular, you know, we'll see that their minds aren't quite the same, you know, and we have a problem with that, because we try to think of, you know, well, if I'm a bee, why would I want to do that, you know, for the good of the hive? And, you know what, yeah, I mean? It's like, you know, we're kind of like that, but then again, you know, in real life, we're like, well, but we also want to take care of ourselves. We don't want to be a slave, you know. Mm-hmm. So we can't really identify with that. So I think it's fascinating, you know, if we have those disparities on our own Earth within different species, just imagine what's out there to be found out about the paranormal. And then when you add to it the fact that, I mean, what if there's mental illness in other multiple universes. Well, now we're screwed because then we figure anything out, right? I mean,
yeah.
Maybe these parasites are mentally ill and they're not like the regular species that are, you know, then we're really screwed.
Yeah.
We haven't got it figured out at all, you know?
Hmm. Okay, so, we're kind of about to run out of time, but I do, the thing that I like so much about your approach to this is that, because this podcast, Starry Time, me and the usual other co-host, Brandon, we usually approach everything as skeptics, because we personally have not really had any experience that has convinced us directly, but we know that there's so many stories that we're just trying to say, there's got to be something to it that's causing everything else. And kind of what you're saying earlier about how, like, even if, you know, 98% of what we're seeing is like, even with pictures, like, if 98% of the pictures are fake, there's the real ones that are making people go out and take the fake ones. And so we are trying to, you know, get to the bottom of why people are even, what's the base of everything. And so what I think is interesting about your book is it's approaching it, trying to, like, actually, rather than accepting everything, being open to everything, but really trying to siphon through it and figure out what's the real stuff. So when people read your book, would you say that that's an experience that they're going to get, kind of what you're talking about, like a more skeptic's point of view, but somebody that's open to it, but that's actually trying to go to it? And then follow-up question, how can they continue to keep up with the haunting as it continues?
Yeah, great questions. I would say definitely. And in fact, I'm very privileged to know some great investigators and magician. You know, they're not magicians, but very good or the best paranormal investigators are healthy skeptics, and they look to the paranormal as the absolute last resort, not the first resort. Now, certainly, certain circumstances or elements will convince you that it's real, you know, after you've been in it for a while. But that's what you need to do. You need to try to disprove it. I mean, that's the way science works, right? Is you need to go in there and say, how can I debunk this? And you say, well, I think it's true. It doesn't matter if you think it's true. You need to eliminate everything, all of the possible normal circumstances, and get to the point where you're like, we can't explain it. Paranormal should never be the first place you go. And I'm an adamant believer in the paranormal, but you still have to do that because that's good science. And you're never going to be able to know what's really paranormal, even if you're in a haunted house, unless you take that approach. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that. The second thing is, both of my books do have websites, you know, bonus pages, and I do update new information found out about that, Haunted House Diaries. There's some new diary entries, there's additional videos. The Lindley Street book, there's additional information on Marcy, the little girl, and all the information we found out since the book was published. So, you know, those are ways you can keep up. And, of course, I answer all my email myself. You know, my website, WilliamJHallAuthor.com. You know, I answer, you know, every single email that I get.
Fantastic.
I just love that we're asking these questions. You know, again, I don't believe in demons, but I don't put people down who do. I just know that religion is not useful in getting rid of these things because, you know, we don't use religion and you know, there's never a case that we can't get rid of by that. And there's also, you know, like I was on a case that had a combination of things. It had a combination of mental illness, had a combination of electromagnetic energy that was causing some of the behaviors and headaches and probably even cancer involved in this case. But as a third component, we do know for a fact that there was a parasite there. So talk about a confusing case. And other groups have gone in there and took videos, and you know, some of it was dust, and they said, oh, look, here's an orb. And dust is very, very confusing. You know, it's very realistic as far as, you know, paranormal experience, but it is dust. And also some of the feelings in the house, they attributed to the house being cursed or evil or negative, and it actually was due to electromagnetic energy coming in through a water pipe. So You know, we really try to go into these things knowing all the various components that it could be, because it really is not that simple. If you go into it and you say, oh, the house is cursed, or, oh, it's, you know, we had a case where a guy was thought his house was cursed and ended up being electromagnetic energy that was coming into the house. It was changing his behavior, it was giving him headaches. And the minute we took out a particular old radio that was there and corrected the frequencies, he was cured instantly. There was no more headaches, there was no behavior changes, there was no curse, there was nothing paranormal. So although it happens to be the paranormal that kind of travels through electromagnetic energy, so just to make things more confusing, but that's just an example of just how careful you know, how much you need to know to really go into that. And so I'm lucky enough to have good people around me knowing that I don't know everything.
I got two last questions for you, and then I'm done. First, where would be the best place to get your book? Your website, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or all of the above?
Yeah, I mean, I'm available everywhere.
Okay.
And, you know, my website, if you want a signed copy, be happy to sign a copy and send it to you. I am in Barnes & Noble. Of course, Amazon, your independent bookseller. You know, I'm honored wherever you get my book. Like I said, if you want a signed copy, I can send you one from my website. Otherwise, you certainly can order it or get it from anywhere good and horrible books are sold.
That's awesome. All right.
Great.
Hopefully mine's one of the good ones, so, you know.
All right, last question, hard-hitting question. Is playing the new Justin Bieber album a adequate way to eradicate Supernatural from your house?
Oh, that's funny. You know, I would if it changes your frequency, it could work, you know.
All right, sounds good.
So true. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we will be sure to attach everything that you said, your website and everything, in the information when we put the podcast out. But we thank you so much for your time and for your patience at the beginning and trying to get it going.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right, thanks, guys. Bye.
All right. Take care.